You're listening to Hooked on Harness.
Welcome, everyone, to our fourth episode of Hooked on Harness. I'm here with Bern Tobin, who we recently had the pleasure of sending on assignment somewhere. But before we get to that...
Big job.
Bern, part of the reason for this podcast is really to talk about the great sport of harness racing, what we love about it, and also, where do you go to find a really great racehorse? You and I had the privilege a couple of weekends ago to go check out the Pepsi North America Cup. Was there with my dad and my 10-year-old son as well.
Who picked six winners in a row.
And the thing that blew me away was...
He was reading the program.
That he kind of... I was calling it an extended math class. I don't know if that actually counts. I think there was definitely some elements of... those races were highly, highly competitive. There might have been $3 million worth of stakes in those dozen or so first races. And certainly the elements, one of the themes that we've talked about in previous episodes is where and how do you find a great racehorse? Like, what are you looking for in terms of the attributes and the qualities? I think that's something that certainly as somebody who's new to the sport, when you see some real heavyweight titans like what we saw there a couple weeks ago and some fantastic racing, you're asking questions about where do you actually go? How do you identify that kind of quality at a very young age, at the yearling sales, as two-year-olds, that sort of thing, besides the horses that come with really big price tags at auction, which would almost be the obvious way to look. But so tell us, where did you end up and what did you learn?
Well, I mean, just before we leave the racetrack, I mean, like you talked about those great racehorses like Mick Wicket, for example, winning, I guess, the Invitational.
Best name in horse racing, Mick Wicket. I love that.
Coming home the last quarter in 25-3. You know, Fear of the Dragon winning the big race there. A lot of great horses that night doing some tremendous things. Where do we find... You want to own one of those horses, don't you?
Why not? Yeah. And I think the thing that blew me away was that Pepsi North America Cup final race, the three odds-on favorites, came around that last quarter. They had about an eighth of a mile to go, and they were all nose-to-nose-to-nose. Mm-hmm. It was a very, very entertaining... very entertaining race. I think I said on the Twitter account, a lot of things in professional sports don't live up to the hype. That race lived up to the hype. Even my 10-year-old, who was almost falling asleep at 10:30, enjoyed that immensely. So anyways, so who did you talk to and what did you learn?
Awesome. So hey, on assignment. So I set out to find some of the answers that you are seeking as a new owner, a new person in this business. So I had an invitation from our good friend and mentor, Gareth Gordon, longtime trainer, driver, owner, the man who got me started in this business.
Big shout out to Gareth Gordon.
Yeah. Gareth, to come to Barrie, Ontario to speak to his church group at a church breakfast. And he wanted me to tell those people about Ontario harness racing and the Barrie connection. So basically, hey, tell us some great stories about harness racing in Ontario. Tell us how it works. And tell us about some of the great people and horses who have come out of the Barrie area. So I said, okay, Gareth, I'm up to the challenge.
And
so
did you know there was a rich racing history in the Barrie area? Did you know that going into this? Or is this something that you just kind of found out as a result of the request?
Well, I've always known a lot about some of the Barrie guys. Keith Waples comes from just north of Barrie. Some great race horses came from that area. You know, Abbey Road C, Armbro Chronicle, and on and on and on. Earl Rowe, who was a parliamentarian, was from that area. The Earl Road Trot, one of the great horsemen from up that area as well. So Gareth decided to go out and round up as many of the great horse people to come to the breakfast. So I'm there up on the pulpit in the church giving my presentation.
Any wagering at this point?
Or no bets in the church. But I think that was a good idea. Anyway, so I get my presentation, and one of the men who Gareth invited was a gentleman by the name of Pat Crow. Now, Pat Crow is from Orlake, Ontario, just outside Barrie, just north of Barrie there. Pat trained and drove Cam Fella, the pacing machine, one of the greatest horses of all time. And I
know the name of that horse.
And even you know Camfella. So I had a chance to sit down with Pat right after our presentation, sitting in a pew in the church.
Amazing.
And I asked him the questions that you want to know. What made him a great horse? Where did they find them? And a lot to learn from Pat Crowe. It was a great interview, and he was spent 15 minutes, and I found you some answers.
That's great. Let's have a listen.
Now, Pat Crowe, you drove, trained Camfella. Tell us about how all that started. I mean, you mentioned before we started talking on air here that you actually spotted him when you were racing against him. Is that right?
Yeah, down at the Mohawk, really. And then later on, I've heard that he was for sale. I knew the owner, part owner of him. And I asked him if he was for sale, and he said, yeah, he'd be for sale after the first of the year. So he started out at $75,000 U.S. Of course, he went out and won that weekend, and as a two-year-old, price went to $100. Then he won the next week, and the price went to $140. So the two norms thought about it, but they come up with $140,000 U.S.,
Now, $140,000 U.S. for a horse, I think he made $17,000 as a two-year-old, something like that. That's a lot of money. What did you see in him?
Well, you could see that he was a good horse. He had a heart. And so, and he wasn't that big a horse, but he, I don't know, he was a racehorse.
Now, we've got a lot of new people coming in to racing now, I hope. And I like to sort of share, you know, what makes a good racehorse. And, you know, because they're not all the same. They're not all machines, although this guy was the pacing machine.
Yeah.
But, you know, you mentioned heart. You know, what made him the best? Was it that determination to win?
Oh, yeah. He wanted to win. He was a good horse. I mean, he was a horse that you had to train him hard. If you didn't train him hard, he didn't race good. Which most horses don't, because at the same time I had another horse called Justin Paston, and I went 11 in a row with him as a free-for-aller, and I'd train him a mile in 2:10, and I'd train Cam a mile in 2 minutes.
Wow.
And if he didn't train Cam around 2 minutes each week, he didn't race as good.
Yeah. Now, you barnstormed with this guy around North America for 2 years as a three-year-old and a four-year-old. Tell us about, is there a moment for you when, you know, you sat behind this horse, you paid $140,000 for him, and you said, hey, we really got something here?
Well, you know, I took him to the Meadowlands after we bought him, and he won his first race, as they said, by the length of a football field. And then he had a stake in Yonkers and a stake at the Meadowlands, and he won them. And then there's a pace called the Kane Pace, three-year-old pace. Excuse me. And I'd raced a filly in Windsor that Sunday, so I flew to New York, to the Meadowlands, and I trained him a mile and 54. And they said to the guys, we're going to go to the Kane Pace. Well, it cost $25,000 to supplement him.
Big money.
It was big money, but he won both heats. And back then, the three-year-old races all went two heats. And if he won the first, you know, you're not going to beat him the second time. So, and it went on from there. It just kept getting better and better. So I had him, they come up from New Bolton Center, which is a big veterinary clinic in Pennsylvania, and I trained him for them. And they wired him up like he thought he was going to explode, really. And I said to them after, well, what do you know about him? The guy said he's got a heart as big as a bathtub. And that's what he had, all heart.
And it was a heart. I mean, a heart does a number of things, right? It provides blood and keeps you going. Yeah. But it also gives you that determination.
Oh, yeah. It's... I don't know how you'd explain it, but... Same with people. If you got a big heart, you know, good hockey players have big hearts. Yeah. Superstars have big hearts.
And they used to say Secretariat had an oversized large heart as well.
Yeah.
Right? Now, when I talk about great racehorses, I mention Secretariat and I mention Camfella. Do you consider your guy
the greatest racehorse, and I know you might be biased, but when you look at him in history, where does he fit?
Well, he fits the greatest. You take, you talk about his secretary. Secretary was a great horse, you know, everybody knew about him because he's a thoroughbred. But Cam was a better racehorse. Cam raced 70 times and win 60 races. Think about it, 60 races. Win 28 in a row against the best in the world.
Talk about some of those wins. I mean, I've watched all those on tape over the years. I mean, some of those were wars. He was almost beaten. He hung in there, fought back. Talk about, you know, some of the highlights for you.
Well, I guess, you know, as a three-year-old, winning the Prix de Tay would probably be the highlight as a three-year-old. I mean, winning the Cane was a big thing and the Messenger. But the Prix de Tay was the big thing in Montreal at the time. It was a big race. And then when he became a four-year-old, the biggest race was the Canadian Pacing Derby. As a young person, I'd seen that race in New Hamburg, Ontario, the first time. And you want to win it. You want, that's my race.
Pat, the four-year-old season really didn't start off that well. Tell us what happened at the beginning of the year.
Well, I brought him back as a four-year-old. I qualified him, and he got sick. Then I re-qualified him, and then I went into the race. He got beat. And he finished second, and then he got beat again, and he finished second, and then he got beat again. Well, there's something wrong with this horse. I had Terry Rook fly down, look at him. Had three other vets look at him. Nobody could figure out what's wrong with him. I'd come home, and I just bought a new Fifth Avenue Chrysler car. And I'm driving back to the Meadowlands because he's racing that night in the World Cup. Mile and a half. And I'm thinking, what's wrong with this horse? Something wrong. Clicked in. He's a Ridgeland. He's only got one testicle, and it's so big he can't pull it up. So I went to the tack shop, bought him a stud support, put on him, win 28 in a row. Now, what would you call that?
That's a pretty good move.
Here's the battle we've been waiting for. It's Fritz on the outside, Cam Fella toward the rail, and they match strides around the far turn. It's Fritz puts ahead in front with 3/8 to go. It's Fritz in front by a half length. Cam Fella's second. They've opened up by 5. And farther back, it's Ideal Tanner racing in third. And they hit 3/4 in 1:25-2. The field turns for home. It's Fritz has a clear lead. He's pulling away from Cam Fella. The lead is 2.5 lengths with 1/8 of a mile to the finish. Then farther back, Ideal Tanner is racing in third. It's Fritz draws off to a 3-length advantage. Cam Fella stubbornly holding on to second. Ideal Tanner is racing in third. 1/16 to the wire. It's Fritz. Cam Fella is coming back. Cam Fella has come back, and he's going to win it. A sensational performance in 1:54-2. Cam Fella wins it.
I remember watching some of those battles with It's Fritz. I mean, yeah. You guys went head-to-head. What do you recall about those races?
Well, the first time that we met was at Meadowlands, more like a match race. And at the head of the stretch, you don't want to hear what I thought.
You can't yell it out.
And but halfway through the lane, I knew I was going to catch him again. And he went by him. So then they went to Blue Bonnet. And Cam had just raced in BC, and we flew him to BC and raced, and we flew him back to race in Montreal the following Sunday. Mm-hmm. And he beat Fritz really easy. Mm-hmm. And then we matched up again in Yonkers, and Fritz didn't even get any money because he came after Cam, and Cam put him away.
Mm-hmm. Now, you grew up Oar Lake, just north of Barrie.
Yeah.
You know, you went on one of the greatest rides in this industry, you know, with a great racehorse. Yeah. When you think back of growing up there, I mean, you know, what was that like?
Well, there's 9 in my family, brothers and sisters. And my dad had a grocery store, and he sold that, and he bought that farm. But you probably don't know this, but he had held races there. Thanksgiving, 24th of May, July the 1st. And so then he... I bought the farm off my mom and dad. I went west and worked out west for 3 years. Trained horses and all over Western Canada. And I came back and I bought that farm. And then when things got going good, I sold it and moved to Barrie, and then moved from Barrie to Windsor. Mm. It won the first race I ever raced at Mohawk.
I did not know that.
And it won the first race, first pair of mutual race ever in the state of Minnesota at Canterbury Downs. Mm.
So you've done some traveling, and and then so you raced with Cam from California to New York, right? And
yeah.
Right across, you know, talk about I guess the travel and the journey. I mean, by train, I'm assuming.
Oh no, he flew.
He flew.
He flew.
Okay.
Yeah, he went on. He'd get on that plane and just like nothing. They put him in a crate and lift him up and put him on. He away he'd go.
He was a good traveler.
Oh, he loved to travel, and he loved the camera.
He loved the camera. Well, he got his picture taken a lot of times in the winner's circle. Let's talk about the 28 win streak. I mean, what type of pressure was there? I mean, like, you know, this was, you know, I mean, it was a media circus back then. People, you know, people were following.
Oh, yeah, he got, you know, people come to watch him race. But the pressure wasn't, you know, if I got to the first quarter pole and kept him out of trouble, game over. You know, so it wasn't that much pressure because he was that much the best.
Now, what were the crowds like? I mean, there would have been 40,000, 50,000, or
yeah.
You know, how was some of the crowds you raced in front of?
Well, when he came last race in New York, when he came out of the paddock, he came up out of the paddock at the head of the stretch in New York. When the announcer said, "Cam Feller," you couldn't hear the announcer for the roar of the people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but one of the biggest thrills I ever really had with him when he was 19, when he went on tour across Canada raising money for charity at the Little Brown Jug. I paraded him there, and I post-paraded the race, and then I turned, I went a half mile with him. And when I got to the announcer said he was at the quarter in 29 seconds, the whole place stood up and roared.
29-second quarter for
a 19-year-old.
19-year-old horse, who's not in training, obviously.
Well, yeah, I trained him long.
Okay.
Because keep him, you know, because he gets fat if he didn't.
Mm.
And, but that day, they just sent... Sails right through your body.
Well, I can imagine.
That's all you could hear. It's just a roar.
A roar. 19 years old, doing a mile at the jug.
See, he had cancer, you know.
Yes.
He died with cancer.
Mm.
So and that's why he had to quit breeding. So we get the gal at him, and he went a cross-country tour.
On a tour. Yeah. Talk about, I guess, it all sort of culminated at Greenwood Raceway.
Yeah, That's
where he ended up. Tell us about that last day. You know, it was, I guess, the goal was probably to retire him after that.
Yeah.
Talk about, I guess, that day and winning that 28th in a row.
Well, probably a little more pressure that day than anything because they'd brought in a couple other horses to try to, you know, to race against them. But once they said go, it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. But it was a sad day.
Yeah.
It was the last day you're going to, you know, pull the lines over them, and it was all over.
And
the grand, you know, Greenwood was full. People come to see, and the whole place was done in green and white.
Green and white.
Uh-huh. They had Cam Feller coasters, Cam Feller glasses, and Cam Feller keychains, and the place was just buzzing.
So, hey, final question for you. You know, I mean, when people, you know, come up to you and understand that you've, you know, you drove, you trained, Cam Feller, you know, people say, hey, what was he like? What do you say?
He was great. Moral to it.
What?
He was great.
He was great,
yeah.
Hey, and hey, this has been great. Thank you for taking the time to talk with Hooked on Harness.
Really incredible story. Byrne, thanks for getting that. You know, the terms like greatness and legendary tend to get thrown around a lot these days, but I think there is an example of true greatness, something truly legendary. What was the most surprising aspect of that to you in terms of what you heard?
Well, I didn't, athletic supporter part of the story. I'd never heard that before. I know he's probably told that story a few times, but I've had a chance to watch all those races, as I said in the interview, and I get tingles up my spine when I hear, you know, him coming back and beating some of the horses who've actually beat him, had him beaten in a race, and some great moments, and it was great to throw in that audio because I think that gives people a sense of it. But I didn't know about the athletic supporter, and here's a horse flying around North America, in a jet plane.
Loving the travel.
Loving
the travel. I think, you know, when you think about and talk about the legacy of this horse, the genes of Cam Fella are literally all over harness racing. So you think of grandson is Better's Delight. Direct offspring was Eternal Cam Nation. So these are highly successful horses in their own rights that trace their legacy and their roots back to Cam Fella.
Yeah, Cam Fella would probably be considered the greatest sire of on the harness racing side, comparable to Northern Dancer
on the thoroughbred side. Yeah, that's a great point. So I'm hopeful then. So this is great. I'm glad that you were able to get this story. And I didn't know this when you went out on the interview, but very interesting after the fact. Listened to it and actually went and checked the two pedigree charts on the two horses that I bought in on. So both Art Seeker and Promise Blue Chip both have Cam Fella three or four generations back on their own pedigree charts. So I'm hoping that the genes of Cam Fella will help propel me to the winner's circle this summer. That'll be great.
Cam will show them the way.
Let's hope so. Thanks for listening, everyone. This has been Hooked on Harness. Find a racetrack near you. Get out there. Enjoy some racing. Thanks for listening.